In this episode of My Cat's Tale, let's meet Teddy, Sushi, and the cat sitter.
I have yet to find a cat that doesn't love the piece of string. Some cats that I've been sitting since kittens, to see them grow up has been really nice. I've lost count of the number of cats, actually, but each one of them has made a little indelible paw print on my heart.
Joining me now on My Cat's Tale, Genevieve. Welcome to the show, Genevieve.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing really well. Both of us have just experienced biblical rain.
We have. This is very British of us to start talking about rain and weather all of a sudden at the start of an interview.
Yeah, and I'm based in Edinburgh, so when I say biblical rain, that kind of narrows it down to summer.
Normal rain.
Yeah, and you just have normal rain down there. But we're here not to talk about the weather, otherwise we'd be a very British podcast, and I'm sure that title's already taken. We're here to talk cats, and you've got more cats to talk about than most.
I do. I have so many cats. I admit I am a little bit of a crazy cat lady, but I do have more cat tales than most, shall we say.
And that's because, as well as having your own cats, you do cat sitting.
Yes. So I've been doing this for the past 2 years now. I started just before lockdown, and then lockdown happened, and so everyone couldn't go away for a while, so I wasn't cat sitting for a bit. But as things have gradually reopened, I started sitting again, and I've lost count of the number of cats, actually, that I sit, but each one of them has left a little indelible paw print on my heart.
Ah, we'll come on to the cat sitting in a moment, but Teddy and Sushi, the two cats that live with you.
Yes, my mum would say are very spoiled cats. They're her grandcats. Teddy and Sushi are now 3 years old, and they are both rescue kittens who we got in 2019, and we had two cats prior to Teddy and Sushi, Milo and Boo, and sadly they died very unexpectedly within 3 months of each other in 2017. So we needed a little while before we got some new fur babies. And there's a rescue shelter near where we live called the Scratching Post, and we thought at first that we would go and donate some of the cat toys and paraphernalia that we had after Milo died. And we visited and we saw all their cats, and they're quite a nice shelter in that they have pens that are open that you can actually go in and meet the cats that are there and stroke them and play with them and stuff. So we kind of got our cat fix while we were in mourning and waiting until we were ready for new cats. And then eventually we were like, you know, we're ready, we want some new cats. And we, with almost military precision, we were planning out the best time to get cats, because we didn't want to get them and then go away. We have what I call paternity leave, which should be like paternity leave, but for your pets. I'm a very big advocate. I think this should be written into law as somebody who is childless. I think, you know, for me, my cats are like my children and my babies. I'm sure that people agree their cats are also like their babies. But when you get a new animal for the first time, I strongly believe it's one of those things where for at least the first 2 weeks, you should spend every day with them and bond with them and get to know them and have them imprint on you and just start a really nice relationship from the get-go. So we planned it around a time and we had no holidays planned. My husband could book 2 weeks off leave so that he could stay at home. And we brought Teddy and Sushi home at 8 weeks, and we'd forgotten how hard it was to have kittens again, because we hadn't had kittens since 2009. So we're 10 years older now as well, and it was like having babies, where we spent the first day, we just like locked ourselves in our living room, dining room, so that they got used to this one space and got used to it. And I was sleeping on the sofa with them, so they got used to me being their mum, and I was feeding them on my lap, so they'd associate me with good things. And it was very, very, it was very planned. And I would only sleep when they were sleeping, just like a human child. So I was like, I need to be awake all the time, just check they're not getting to mischief. I think that's really paid off, because we've got two really lovely cats now who are really well adjusted. They love us. Although I think I think Sushi has got attachment issues with my husband, because she literally follows him around everywhere. When he goes to the toilet, she sits outside and waits for him until he comes out. She meows outside the door. When he goes to work, now that lockdown has lifted, she wanders around the house meowing for him. It's very cute. And then she kind of settles for me, which is fine. I've got used to the fact that I'm not number one in her eyes. But Teddy is a mummy's boy, so that's fine. We do it very well. It has been fun relinquishing my bed again. I'd been kind of had 2 years of being used to having the bed all to myself, and now I have a very small corner of bed that I curl up in while my husband gets an unencumbered space on his side of the bed, and Teddy and Sushi take up a lot of sprawling parts at the bottom. But our genius tip was put the cat bed at the bottom of your bed, and it will contain the cat to the cat bed and not sprawl all out all over the place, so you're not like trying to not sleep, roll over and squish a cat. But yeah, last night wasn't a good night's sleep. I had very little space. My husband had a great night's sleep. I had terrible night's sleep. Both cats were with us. I needed space.
So was there just this sort of natural decision between Teddy and Sushi about who would go with who?
What, as in whether who's going to be a mummy's boy and who's going to be a daddy's girl? I think they just naturally decided, although I always pick my husband up on this, but he treats them differently because one is a boy and one's a girl. And he swears he doesn't, but he does. And then he's finally admitted that he does now. But with Teddy, he's more kind of rough and tumble play with Teddy. And Sushi's like, oh, she's a girl, so she's a bit more delicate, and we've got to be a bit more nice and have cuddles with her and stuff. We're going to be a bit more rough with Teddy. Whereas I treat them both exactly the same.
But the lockdown always figures at some point in these podcasts as this sort of, well, in everybody's lives, human and pet, of this sort of line. So they would have been, what, about a year old when lockdown started?
They were 9 months old when lockdown started. However, when we first got Teddy and Sushi, I became a stay-at-home cat mum. So they had me 24/7 anyway, and after the first 2 weeks of my husband's paternity leave, he went back to work, and he would work from home 1 or 2 days a week anyway, so he wasn't always out, but I was always at home, so they got used to it. So when lockdown happened, it actually wasn't that much more different for them, other than that my husband was at home a few more days than he was previously. Whereas with our previous cats, it was a case of I'd leave for work at 7 o'clock in the morning and then wouldn't get home until 7 o'clock in the evening. So they didn't have us for 12 hours a day. It wasn't suddenly, huh, who are you? Why are you here all day? What's going on? It's always been a case of, oh, she's around again. She's still here all the time. So it hasn't been too much of an adjustment for them.
It's always been quite a highly connected family that you have.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And that kind of leads me on to the cat sitting that you do, because the difference between that family that has strong bonds that have been going on for years compared to cat sitting, which must be comparatively quite fleeting.
It depends on how long I'm sitting for. Sometimes, yes, if I'm only just doing like an overnight or a weekend when people are away. Sometimes people go away, you know, obviously usually a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. There's one job that I do, and last time I did it, I was sitting in for 6 weeks. And in those instances, the longer you have with them, the more of a relationship you get to build with the cat. Although I have a very particular set of skills. One is being able to get people to tell me things they don't normally tell other people. That's my day job. And then the second thing is I'm a cat whisperer. Who knew? But it's very handy when cat sitting. It's funny because I do these meet and greets before I take on any job, because I always say I just want to check that we're a good fit. I get on with the cat likes me, and also for the owner to see how I interact with the cat, how they interact with me, just so that they feel comfortable while they're away. I don't want them to think, I don't want them to worry while they're away and think, oh, you know, how's the cat doing? And I send videos and pictures twice a day during my visits so they can see how we're getting on. But if I don't do that initial interaction, they can't see it for themselves. So I feel like it puts them at ease if I do that first. And I just have this, I am a cat whisperer, so there's no easy way of saying it. I just have this way with cats that when I meet them, I usually have owners that will say to me, oh, they're very shy, so they might not even come out while you're here, or they don't really like people. This one doesn't like to be stroked. Don't go anywhere near them. And then when I turn up and I meet this cat, I just have this specific skill I have. It's like, it's not even a magic trick. I just have a something about me, I guess. Cats realize I'm a crazy cat lady initially and that I'm friends. And I crouch down, stick my hand out. Hey, you know, say the little noise, say their name. And they kind of look at me, come up, sniff my hand. And then immediately they let me stroke them. And then once I get in, kind of like behind the ear, stroke a bit of the glands on the front of the face. And then I've had times where cats just like, they flop on the floor and they roll over and I'm stroking their belly the first meeting. And the owner will say to me like, how are you doing this? Like, this cat does not even do this for me. How are you doing this? You've met the cat for like 2 minutes and suddenly this cat is yours. What's your secret? And it's just like, I'm a cat whisperer. And I'll send pictures of, I've got one cat that I sit and I'll film us kind of having cuddles and stroking her, and the owner will be like, she doesn't let us pet her. How are you doing this? And the same cat, she'll be sitting snuggled with me on a sofa, and the same owner emails me saying, she doesn't even sit with us on the sofa. How are you sitting with her on the sofa? But yeah, I don't know what my secret is. I'm just I'm a cat whisperer.
Does that changed behaviour with the cat carry on when their owners come home? So like, if a cat wouldn't come up to a chair but does come up to a chair with you, does that roll on to the owner as well? That she's like, oh, you like sitting on a chair now?
Sometimes. It depends on the environment. And I have to say, I don't know if some of my secrets and tricks have come from, I have watched a lot of episodes of My Cat from Hell. And so I take my lead from the godfather of cats, Jackson Galaxy, and all his tips and tricks for how to deal with problem cats. And a lot of the cats that I do sit, the owners consider they are problem cats for one reason or another, either because they scratch a bit, or they're a little bit hissy, or they're shy, or they don't like people, or they have to exhibit some other problem behavior, like they're pooping in the wrong place, or I can't get him to do this. And or they're a little bit antisocial and they don't like coming out. And I guess because I've got time with them, whenever I go to visit a cat, I'm with them for at least an hour, usually twice a day. And over this period of time, I just introduce new positive behaviours that they like. It's funny, I get a lot of owners when I'll do the meet and greet and I'll say, and where are their toys? And they'll say, oh yeah, they don't really like playing, so I haven't got any toys. And then I turn up with my secret toys and these cats revert back to being like a 12-week-old kitten where they're leaping around and they're having so much fun. And I send the video and they're like, how are you getting them to play? Like, they never play. And I think the problem is that a lot of owners become a little bit complacent, or people don't know how to actually play with cats. I think everyone has cats and they think they're cat lovers, but they don't know how to actually play with cats. And they think that one job I went to, and they handed me this like a stuffed mouse and like with a tail that's just like a piece of cord, and they shoved it in front of my face and said, here, you can play with this. And it's like, no, you can't. What would you expect the cat to do with this? Like, cats want to play with toys that they can interact with, stuff that will engage them and stimulate them. And if you've just got a stuffed mouse that you just put on the floor and leave it there, you know, what's he going to do with it? It's the same with a child. If you just got something and put it on the floor, how are they going to play with that? Obviously, they're going to pick it up and interact with it. A cat doesn't know how to do that, but cats just won't go, oh, that's on the floor. Okay, well, what's fun about that? So I've got like some really great wand bird toys that I fling around, and I've got a laser dart, and I have yet to find a cat that doesn't love the piece of string. These really simple things like that owners don't even think about. Although I did have one case where after I played with the string, the owner then decided to play with string and then left it out and the cat ate it, and then that caused a trip to the vet. So always put your toys away when you're playing. They're not things that cats should be left alone with. But sometimes, yes, so I've had a cat Mac, who lives down the road. And his behavior, I noticed the first time I sat him, was he just kind of had a routine where he would eat his meal. And then it was in a, he lived in a flat, and he would just sit in the hallway of the flat after he ate and just kind of groom there and do nothing. And the owners would come into the living room and Mac would always just sit in the hallway. And I commented to the owner saying, oh, you know, Mac's just in the hallway. And she said, oh yeah, that's what he does. He just eats and he just likes to sit in the hallway and doesn't do anything. So on the second visit, I thought, okay, I don't know if I just create a good relationship with cats because I force them to be with me. So wherever they go, I follow them and then I sit there with them. So they get used to me being the person that's going to bring food and nice things. So I just started sitting with him in the hallway. Every time he'd finish eating, he'd sit in the hallway. I'd sit with him in the hallway too. I'd stroke him a bit there. I'd watch something on iPlayer to pass some time while they fall asleep. And then gradually I moved further and further down the hallway until I got into the living room. And then after he finished eating, he got out to the hallway and he was like, well, where is she? She's not here. Followed me into the living room. Then he has a fuss in the living room. We have a play there. And we made it into this little routine. And then I was only sitting him for 3 days. But when the owner came back, that behavior had stuck. And so the owner was saying to me, oh, Mac's like great now after he finishes eating. He now comes into the living room, has a little fuss. We have a little play. And that's great that that behavior is stuck and he's become a more sociable cat. Other times I have cats who, you know, they like to play. And I think the one cat lives in a house with a child who's 7 now, and she doesn't know how to handle the cat properly at all. So the cat is quite fearful of people. Initially, when you go to touch her, she flinches because she just thinks, what are you going to do to me? So it always takes a couple of days to regain trust, to say, you know, actually, I'm friendly. I'm not going to hold you up by your armpits and dangle you around. And I'm not going to pull your tail or poke you in the face like you've been experiencing. you know, you don't have to hide. I'm, you know, going to do nice things for you and we'll feed and have play and have fun. You know, clearly, if that's the environment that they're living in, then nothing's going to be able to fix that unless you change that environment. But a lot of the times I introduce good behaviors that the owner then sees, oh, these are positive things. And then the owner will then buy the specific toys that I've been playing with, or they'll buy other things that I've been using that's calmed the cat down. And then it creates a more happy cat and a happy owner after.
What does it feel like going into those homes and you look at the cat and just go, I can help you?
Yeah, sometimes it's tough. I had one job where I came in and somebody else had been caring for the cat. And the owners were away. Somebody else had been caring for the cat and that person had to go away on holiday. So I was taking over from them. And when I came in, it was clear that the person who had been looking after the cat had not been looking after the cat. The cat, there were 3 cats in the house. The eldest was 21 and it was a case of neglect. It was really awful to see. The person who I was liaising with, who hired me, her WhatsApp picture was this cat. And I said, I'm going to use a different name now. I was like, is that Bamboo on your WhatsApp picture? And she said, yes. And I was like, but that is not what she looks like now. And I took a picture and sent it to her and she was shocked. She couldn't believe how thin this poor cat was. This cat was eating less than a quarter of a pouch of food a day. She had no teeth, so she couldn't eat her food properly. There were 2 other cats in the house that would just swoop in and eat her food. There was the litter tray was like 2 inches solid thick of soiled litter that just hadn't been cleared out of the tray. It was in winter, height of winter, and the heating was only on for 20 minutes a day. And this poor cat was, I'd always come in and find her huddled next to the radiator waiting for it to come on. She was so thin. Her fur was dank. She had dandruff. She had a buildup of gunk in her eyes. She was too weak to clean herself. She was too weak to walk up and down the stairs. Felt so awful. And I messaged the owner and I said, you know, I'm afraid the previous person that was caring for this cat has not been caring for your cat. Listed all the things that were wrong. And the owner felt really bad as well that she, you know, that this had happened. But she was unaware because she wasn't there. And I'll stress that the owners were away for 6 weeks. So this other person had been looking after for these 3 cats for a month before I came in. So that's how that situation had got into that point. It wasn't just like, you know, the owners have been away for a week. But then it's really rewarding to see, once I come in thinking, right, what am I going to do to make this better now? We, you know, we're going to turn the heating on, make the environment better. We'll give her a bit more engagement. We'll make sure she's eating properly, give her the food. And then to see her putting more weight on and getting better and being a bit more perky and not wanting to be huddled next to the radiator all the time. You know, those things are really rewarding, to be able to see cats who have been in a bad situation that you're able to help be in better ones. But sometimes it is a bit hard to come in and see those situations. And other times I'll see ones where I think, you know, this isn't too bad, but by, I guess, the power of suggestion of seeing how happy the cat is because I'm playing with them when they're never played with, that people think, oh, okay. Or they say, oh, you know, the cat doesn't like, the cat's a bit overweight. And they think, oh, but, you know, he doesn't like moving. So then I throw treats up the stairs or down the stairs. And if they're food motivated, they'll run after it. So they're getting some exercise still. And the owners will be like, oh, I hadn't thought of that before. That's great. You know, I'll start doing this now. So it's really nice to be able to take positive behaviours and introduce them and have the owners take that on board and follow up on it.
How much follow-up do you have? So take the case of Bamboo for a moment. You know, when the owners come back and, you know, you've contributed to an improvement in the cat's life, Do you still have contact with the likes of Bamboo and other cats? Do you now just have a whole list of cats that you kind of half follow because you've been cat sitting them?
they've become almost all the cats, save for the ones where owners have moved away out of my jurisdiction, as it were, have all become kind of, I guess, repeat cust- I don't want to use the word customers, but become repeat clients. So I continue to sit them, so I do see them quite frequently after the initial visit. I guess people kind of see the job, the kind of work that I do while I'm with them, and then they feel comfortable with me enough to want to keep bringing me back to keep sitting them after. And a lot of these people are, you know, some of the owners have become my friends now, where they'll just message me when I'm not sitting them to just send me a picture of their cat, which is nice. But yeah, it's nice to kind of be involved in their lives. And, you know, some cats that I've been seeing since kittens, you know, they're 2 years old now. So to see them grow up in that time has been really nice.
With all that talk, with all that sharing with the owners, you call yourself a cat whisperer, but how much of you is a human whisperer then? Because you have to build up an emotional connection, a trust with the owners as well.
And that's, I think, you know, I'm a podcaster as my, I don't want to say my day job, but my cat sitting funds my podcast.
I think they call it a portfolio career.
That is the term for it now, yes. Well, so I interview celebrities as a day job, and I have a very short window of time, less than 5 minutes, when I first join a call to interview them, where I have to build up a rapport very, very quickly so that to gain their trust, so that they tell me things that they don't normally tell other people, so that they feel comfortable enough to open up to me and feel like we're on a level and they don't just feel really tight and robotic and answering the same questions over and over again. Maybe the fact that I did a joint honours journalism and psychology degree may have something to do with it, that I have this other special set of skills that I kind of know how people think a little bit. I kind of employ that when I do a meet and greet. I think just the nature of how they see me with their cat initially puts them at ease. So if they feel, I guess it's like if you're choosing a babysitter for your child, right? You know, if you feel comfortable with the babysitter and you feel confident that they're going to be able to look after your child, your cat, then you feel comfortable with them. I think it helps that I've got two cats that have their own Instagram account and a YouTube channel. Then people think, okay, she probably is a bit of a crazy cat lady because she goes this extra mile for her cats. And yeah, I think I mean, it's not just the meet and greet. I think just the level of communication that I have with the owner while I'm sitting them, the pictures that I send, the videos that I send, that they, you know, I try and keep it light and friendly and offer gentle suggestions for things that will be good. And they can see that I go the extra mile for their cat, that they end up liking me. I don't know. What can I say? I don't know. I've created a bit of a monster because I've got complete... I'm on an agency called Cat in a Flat. So if people are going away and they need a cat sitter, a Cat in a Flat may be able to help you. So I'm on Cat in a Flat, and I've got... I'm totally 5-star reviews, which I'm really proud of, and also has created a monster because it means that I'm quite in demand, where people then just want to keep booking me. And I guess it's that life of a freelancer type thing where you don't want to say no because you're saying no to work, and you don't know when you're going to get it again. So you say yes, they could go elsewhere. And then if I've got an existing client who asks to book me, you don't want to say no to them because they could go somewhere else as well. Although I'm now in quite the fortunate position where my clients will find out when I'm away, and then they'll arrange their holidays around me to make sure that I can be there to sit their cat, which is nice. But I've got a new job actually that I'm starting this weekend, and I messaged the owner saying, you know, yeah, I'm available, like to do a meet and greet just to check that we're a good fit and the cats are happy with me and you like me. And it was funny because then when I met at the end, she said, are you happy to do the job? And I was like, oh yeah, of course, you know, the two cats they're lovely, I'm happy to do it. She's like, oh thanks, because I thought you were vetting me, because like your reviews and the comments were so good, she thought that I was too good to be true. So she was like, I thought you were vetting me to see if you wanted to take the job. And it's like, no, I just want to check that, you know, you like me and the cats are happy with me. So yeah, I think also they like me because I don't charge a lot of money to do it. I charge the minimum amount of money that Cat in the Flat will allow me to charge, which is £10 for a visit. I don't feel like it's particularly a skilled or challenging work to cat sit, and to me I feel like I'm just being paid to play with cats for a couple of hours a day. So I don't charge very much at all. Like I charge what would be the equivalent of minimum wage, because I don't think it's very skilled, but also because I do it for fun as well. So it's just like a bonus that, you know, I get to meet some nice people and I get to play with cats and stuff. And I think people kind of appreciate that I'm not trying to just screw money out of them, because it can be quite lucrative pet sitting. And I'm not doing it for the money, I'm doing it for the cats. So I think once they see that, they're like, oh, okay, we like her a bit more.
What did Teddy and Sushi make of this? Because you must be bringing back so many different cat smells.
Yeah, so my husband thought that, oh, they're not going to like this. But actually, they've been completely fine. And I take, because I take our toys to the cats' houses because they usually don't have any. So I'm taking toys that have got Teddy and Sushi smell on it to other cats' houses, and they're playing with them, and then they're leaving the smell on it, and I bring it back to Teddy and Sushi, and they're perfectly fine. They don't have any problem at all. I can stroke a cat that I'm sitting and then come back and not wash my hands and stroke Teddy and Sushi straight away, and they're fine. They don't care about it at all. The only time when they've been really bothered is one day a stray cat just turned up in our garden, and Teddy was staring him out from inside in the dining room through the doors. And we thought, where's this ginger and white cat come from? And I went outside, and then it was clear that he was really badly injured. He'd been in a fight and he was a stray. His fur was in bad condition. He needed to be taken to a vet, and he hadn't been neutered, and he sprayed my leg. And I guess it was the time of the year. I was wearing a onesie. I was wearing an Aristocats onesie.
How on brand.
At the time, yeah. And he sprayed my leg. And I have washed this onesie. I can't even tell you how many times I've washed this onesie. And I have boiled it so many times. But for some reason, Teddy can still smell this spray on my leg. We called the cat Corey. Corey's smell has forever been impregnated, I don't know how, into the leg of my onesie. And whenever I wear it, and this is like at least 18 months on since when we caught him, Teddy is not happy with it. I think I'm going to have to throw it away. because he's just so not happy with it. He's like, he will, as soon as I put it on, he comes right up to my leg and he sniffs it. And he's like doing that thing, you know, when the nostrils flare in and out quite a lot, where he's like, I'm not really happy with this. Something's, the smell is not right. He's really not happy. So I think I'm going to have to, things going to have to go.
Maybe he just prefers 101 Dalmatians.
Funny you say that. Aristocats was on TV when Teddy was about 9 months old. And I put this video on Instagram, actually. It was on TV and I thought, oh, this will be interesting. Let's see what happens. And Teddy was sleeping on the bed. People probably don't know this, but cats actually really like watching cartoons. And owners that I cat sit are really surprised when I say this. But we discovered it when Teddy was very young, like 9, 10 weeks old. He used to watch Family Guy in the evening. It was his way of settling him, to settle him to go to bed. And I think it's just to do with the really bright colours and things moving on screen in a way that, that they don't. In the same way that I guess it would entertain babies or children if you were if you played that to them. So cats really like watching cartoons. And Aristocats was on TV and Teddy was initially sleeping and he woke up and saw it was on. And he was like transfixed for a while, and then he jumped down off the bed, and then he stood up on two hind legs with paws up on the TV with like nose to the screen watching. And it was this great moment in the film where Edgar is plotting to kidnap the cats and take them away, and Teddy like jumped up at the screen at that exact moment. He was like so unhappy at what was at the plot points of what was happening in the film. But he was like transfixed. I filmed him for like at least 10 minutes watching the Aristocats, where he was just like so transfixed by watching it. There's a cat that I'm sitting now at the moment who, he's a bit of an anxious cat, and I've started introducing cartoons to him, which has amazed the owner. But I found that he only likes watching boys' cartoons. He doesn't like watching girls' cartoons. I tried him on, there's a cartoon called 44 Cats, which I thought would be hilarious for him to watch, but it's a girls' cartoon, and maybe it's just all the pink and purple in high squeaky voices. He doesn't like it at all. But I switched over and Scooby-Doo was on and he loved it. But when I left him last night, I left him on an hour-long Alvin and the Chipmunks marathon, and then after that was Power Rangers. So I think he probably enjoyed it. And he also likes watching Pokemon too.
There you go. It takes all kinds. It does. It does. And we love them all for it. They're all different. They're all wonderful. It's a whole bundle of URLs and locations on the web we can talk about here, Genevieve. Let's start off with Sushi and Teddy's Instagram, because that's probably where the most fun is going to be.
Yes. Well, you just search for at Teddy and Sushi and you will find them.
And as a fellow podcaster, you've got another podcast in there, I heard you mention.
I do, yes. It's nothing to do with cats. Although I do shoehorn, I do try to shoehorn a mention of Teddy and Sushi or cats into almost every episode that I do. I am a crazy cat lady. Yeah, no. Yeah, my podcast is called Celebrity Catch-Up Life After That Thing I Did. It's, I always describe it as an unashamedly nostalgic celebrity interview podcast where I chat with the stars of much-loved TVs, movies, and music of the 80s, 90s, and noughties. And we reminisce and talk about how their lives unfolded after that thing they did. So if you're kind of like 80s stuff, I've got the very lovely Dexter Fletcher. We talk about Press Gang, and obviously he's a very big Hollywood film director now. I also speak with, from the 80s, who else is there? It's like Michael Winslow, who was in Police Academy. He was the guy that made all the voice sound effects, or Go West, the pop band. 90s stuff. So I speak to people from American Pie and Clueless. Jet from Gladiators. That's making a comeback now. Thank you, BBC. Early noughties stuff. Pop bands like Steps and Blue. And Adam Richmond from Man vs. Food was a recent guest as well. So yeah, it's a good old little romp down memory lane, but also really interesting stories from people who, my aim is always to make you feel like, oh, actually they're quite nice. I probably had like one view of them, but after now I've listened to them, actually they're a pretty decent person. I didn't know that. It's not something that I could have just found out on Wikipedia. Actually, this person's really interesting.
And we will have links to the Instagram and the podcast back at our website, mycatstailpod.com. That sounded almost like professional freelance changing notes at the very end there. I don't think we've done that on this podcast yet. Genevieve, wonderful to hear about yourself, Teddy, Sushi, and all the cats that you've had an impact on their life. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to My Cat's Tale, a Spence Media production. Listen to more tales of our perfect pets at mycatstailpod.com and support us on Patreon. Teddy and Sushi there, but also Genevieve, the cat sitter, and many, many more cats in there as well. Probably the tale with the most cats so far here at My Cat's Tale. If you've been listening in your favourite podcast app, you'll have access to all of those. If you're listening on our website, you can have a look through the website as well, but do please consider following us if you use Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or any of the smartphone apps on your iPhone or Android device. Just head to our website, mycatstailpod.com, and click on the Listen tab to find out how.